This is episode 394 for Monday, June 9th, 2025. You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hi, everybody, and welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. My name is Bob Branco. Glad to be with all of you on this fine day. Before we continue, let me introduce the panel members that we have so far, and hopefully more will follow. We start out with Mitch Pomerantz.
Good afternoon, good evening from beautiful downtown Pasadena, California. It is 74 and sunny, and it's a perfect day to go out, except I've been stuck here all morning working. So haven't had a chance to step outside at all, but it's nice spring weather here in Pasadena.
We are in the 70s today, partly sunny, partly cloudy, a little rain in the forecast, a little on the muggy side, but it's nowhere near as hot as it was 5 or 6 days ago. Actually, about 5 days ago, or four. Thursday was hot. It was up to 90 last Thursday. Don Wardlow.
Yeah, doing pretty good here in Jersey. We've had about 3 really good days in a row, and apparently by Wednesday or Thursday, it'll be back up around 90 again here.
I heard that. We are still waiting on Luther King. He said he was going to be late. I haven't heard yet from either Peter Altschul or Reverend Michael Garrett, but I'm sure that when they arrive, they will let us know immediately. Allow me to thank those people who make it possible for Sports Roundtable to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. And then, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions. Thank you for archiving our shows. All you have to do to find them is go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to Sports Roundtable Podcast. Click on them, and you will see most of our archives from latest to earliest. And merci, Jackie. I saved the media sources for last because we are about to welcome a brand new media source to the Sports Roundtable family. I would like to recognize WJPR in the Miami-Fort Lauderdale area. I would like to congratulate Al Gordon, who is the owner of that station, and thank him very much for his commitment to Sports Roundtable. Al, thank you, and welcome to the Sports Roundtable media family. I also want to say hi to Herbie, who is our facilitator for today's program, along with Brad, our streamer. And because we're being streamed live, as always, I'd like to give out my email address for those people who would like to send us comments. It is bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. I also want to say hello out there to Glenn Grimes, who listens to Sports Roundtable on a regular basis. Hi, Glenn. I would like to start out the program by talking about the firing of Tom Thibodeau from the New York Knicks after Indiana beat them in the semis. Here's my take on it. And I know each team is different in how they think. The Knicks did not hesitate to fire Thibodeau after they lost the series to Indiana. I think a lot more was expected of the Celtics than was expected of the Knicks at this point, yet it looks like the Celtics are maintaining the services of Joe Mazzulla. What was the big rush to fire Thibodeau? Maybe you can elaborate on that, Mitch, because you touched on it a little bit before we started.
Yeah, James Dolan, and this was from Colin's show this morning, James Dolan is an artist. And he just finished 2 years working on the Las Vegas Sphere, which is apparently quite a complex. I know when we were in Vegas in April, my wife said it was really pretty neat looking. But Dolan had been focused on that project. And coincidentally, the last 2 years, he kept out of New York Knicks business and let, I think his name is Leon Rose, their general manager, actually make the decisions. And now all of a sudden, the Sphere is done. Dolan is back sticking his nose into something he really knows nothing about. He apparently was in the exit meeting with Thibodeau. So it leads one to the conclusion that James Dolan still thinks he knows something about basketball, and he has shown over the last 25 years that he doesn't. There were, I think, also some grumblings among a few of the players. Thibodeau is old school. He doesn't take nonsense from anybody. He wants his best players to play perhaps a little more than they should. But the reality is, you know, without sounding like I'm one of those old guys, get off my lawn, but it really sounds like the younger players, particularly on the Knicks, thought he worked them too hard and pushed them too hard and expected too much. So I don't think Thibodeau should have been fired, but this is a players' league, and if enough players complain, particularly the stars, the chances are that's what's going to happen. Thibodeau, I know he's been fired a couple, three times, and basically for the same reasons. But if I were a desperate team, if I were one of the worst teams in the NBA, I'd certainly give him a shot.
I agree with you. I don't think Thibodeau should have been fired, as I pointed out. All right, I'll say it this way, Mitch. The Knicks accomplished a lot more this year than they've accomplished in a long, long time. And normally when that happens in any sport with any team, you usually credit the coach or manager for this. And you know, he may be old school and all that. I like old school coaches, but I understand what you were saying. But the problem with today's athletes, a lot of them, it's all about me, me, me. You've got athletes, yep. You've got the inmates running the asylum, for lack of a better term.
And that's more so in the NBA than any other sport. These young people they seem to be, you know, as you said, the inmates are running the asylum, and that's probably not going to change.
I don't see that changing anytime soon. So generally now we have Indiana versus Oklahoma in the finals, and what a market. The National Basketball League is probably having a nightmare about this. What a market. Indiana and Oklahoma City.
The ratings were down in the first game to a very low figure. I haven't heard what the ratings were for the second game, but you know, I won't say I'm a crazed NBA fan. I was when the Lakers during Showtime. That was, to me, the best teams were the Lakers Showtime teams in the 80s. But I haven't put on a playoff for the finals game yet. If I have a choice between listening to a ho-hum mid-season Dodgers game and the game between Oklahoma City and Indiana, guess what I'm going to be listening to, and it isn't NBA.
No, you'll be listening to the Dodgers.
That's right.
You know, if you're a fan like that, you would. I mean, I listen to my Red Sox no matter what time of the year it is, even if the NBA playoffs are going on. In fact, I try to juggle the best way that I can, actually, to be honest with you. Sometimes I'm here. My wife and I, we joke about this all the time. She'll have the Bruins on television. I'll have the Celtics and Red Sox on the radio or on the A device, and it's almost comical.
If the Lakers had been in the finals, I'd have two radios or one radio and the A critter.
Sure.
At the same time. I've got two ears after all.
I do that too, guys.
Hey, Reverend Mike.
Hey, Michael.
What are your thoughts on Thibodeau, Reverend Mike?
Getting fired?
Yeah.
I think that they probably made a mistake. He'll go somewhere and he'll build another team. The guy's a good builder.
I think he'll go somewhere else easily. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
But in hockey, we've got Florida Panthers, Edmonton Oilers. Now that's the series that I expected. Usually I always say hockey's the most unpredictable sport when it comes to playoffs. Not this year. No, not this year. This was a series that a lot of us expected to see. Edmonton, Florida.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, can the Panthers do it again?
Would that be a three-peat if they do it again?
No, they didn't win the first year they were in. It's their third final, but they didn't win it the first year they were in.
Yeah, well, I can't remember. Yep.
Yes.
I'm rooting for Edmonton because they beat my Kings. So I'm rooting for the Oilers.
Exactly. Don, you wanted to say something. You hinted at that before we started the program. You had a topic of interest. What was it?
Yes. Well, you know, we've talked really ad nauseum about the injuries among Major League Baseball players, pitchers especially, and just this week, this isn't my topic, but just this week, Corbin Burnes went down. He needs a Tommy John operation. Now, the question was, when was somebody going to say something about these women softball players in the College World Series and the absolutely insane amount of pitching they do? I mean, yes, they pitch underhand, yes, but they're still human beings with human bodies, and they've got to have a limit somewhere. Well, somebody finally hit their limit. They didn't suffer an injury, thank the Lord, but pitcher Nyjah Kennedy from Texas Tech, who was in the last College World Series, and they made it to the final against the Texas Longhorns, and Kennedy pitched 78 pitches in Wednesday's game, the first game of that final 2 out of 3 series, which that's the one that the Horns won that one. Tech won the next night where she threw 109 pitches, and finally she hit the wall on Friday. She started the third game in a row. She only lasted 25 pitches and gave up 5 earned runs in one inning, and Texas Tech ended up losing that World Series to the Texas Longhorns. But, you know, you figured there had to be a limit, and someday, one of these days, some softball player was going to hit it on the biggest stage, and it happened.
Don, I know nothing about women's softball. Do they pitch underhanded?
Yes, they do.
And slow pitch too, right?
I wouldn't say slow pitch.
No.
They're up around between 60 and 70 MPH. More usual is 60 odd, but there was at least one pitcher in the recent World Series who could touch 70 MPH. I forget now whether it was Kennedy from Texas Tech or Pickens from Tennessee. It was one of those two.
Because they will tell you that, and which is why people like Ted Abernathy and a couple of others in Major League Baseball threw underhanded, that if you throw underhanded, it's much more natural and much less strain on the arm. But when I saw that article this morning, I said, that poor lady, her arm must be dragging.
But you know,
she had to be tired. But you can also underhand it. You can get movement on the ball. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to throw overhand to get movement. They can throw a curveball underhand. It's all in the grip.
But the last underhand pitcher was Kent Tekulve. There hasn't been one since then. I don't know just why there hasn't, especially with all the injuries. But
analytics.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the Dodgers played against somebody this year who didn't throw totally underhanded, but like three quarters, like down, you know, his arm was, his elbow was down, just not quite, you know, the way an underhander would go. So there are still some guys who throw sidearm or more than sidearm but no, you're right. There are no strictly underhanded pitchers in baseball. Like there aren't any knuckleball or screwball pitchers these days.
So I want to continue on, of course, I want to continue on Don's to talk about the World Series because of my Lady Longhorns. And the pitcher on the other side also had a story, and I don't like these stories when I'm playing an opponent. She pitched on May 31st. Tegan Cavan. She pitched on May 31st against Oklahoma, and that was the day her grandmother died.
Okay.
And she pitched she pitched anyway, and she was the offset of the young lady from Texas Tech for Texas. She didn't pitch as much as Kennedy did, but she was the ace for the Longhorn staff, pitching staff. And
that day, that May 31st, that was the day they beat Oklahoma. That was Oklahoma's first loss in that round. And then Texas Tech knocked them off their pedestal after four consecutive winning tournaments for Oklahoma. That's part of why they got as much coverage on my podcast as they did, because they had won four consecutive World Series, you know, similar to my own Lady Huskies basketball team winning four consecutive national tournaments between 2013 and 2016. You know, so I'd given the Sooners a lot of coverage, you know, right up until they got beat by Texas Tech on Monday night, the 2nd of June. That was the end of that. And then it was Sooners and Longhorns from then on.
And the fear about the Sooners, it's the power of throughout that lineup. Those girls can really hit home runs. And so they've had a really good run, but I was just tickled pink. Well, should I say tickled orange, but about the Lady Longhorns stuff. They did a great job. So when I go to work out in the morning, I will have my orange and white Texas shirt on.
Now they needed a better broadcaster at the microphone on their games. I tell you, their baseball guy, Craig Way, he's pretty good, but whoever that guy was on softball, he was just dreadfully boring. He sounded like he was bored out of his mind. And the only way I could listen to that was to switch over to listen to Ryan Radke and Aaron Miller on Westwood One. But
Radke's pretty good.
Yeah, Radke is. He's solid. Absolutely. And the Tech team, Jeff Haxton was on play-by-play, and Nikki Amico, who was kind enough. I sent her a letter. I wanted to tell her that I thought she and Jeff had done a splendid job on the tournament, and she was kind enough to respond to me in kind. I just saw that just before we came on the air.
Don, I wanted to get back to what you said a little while ago about Corbin Burns. What's up with that? How did that come into being?
The talk has been for a while that he had trouble with his elbow, and finally a couple days ago, you know, it came out that he definitely needs Tommy John, and this is mid-season, so you can forget this season, you can forget most of, or if not all of, 2026 before Corbin Burns is back for the Diamondbacks.
This is absolute insanity, what's going on in baseball. It really, really is. And I'm wondering if we're ever going to resolve this.
Hey, just to give everybody an update, not including the two position players, Kike and Miguel Rojas, who have cleaned up in the ninth inning on some blowout games, the Dodgers have now used a grand total of 28 pitchers. And we're not even halfway through the season.
Wow.
We put our fourth starting pitcher on the injured list over the weekend, Tony Gonsolin. So the Dodgers now have Snell, Glasnow, Sasaki, and Gonsolin. Yeah. You know, and the Dodgers, I'm not sure what they're going to do because we got a big series coming up tonight against the Pods. But we found this out. Apparently, even with the shortage of starting pitchers, Roberts, either by choice or he's being directed, the Dodgers seem to want to give their starters 5 days off. And even with that extra day off, it doesn't seem to be helping their arms any, not with four starters on the IL.
Has anyone
I was just going to say, you guys, I can't feel sorry for you, Mitch, Because you guys,
I didn't expect sympathy from my brother, who is a Houston fan. I did not expect that.
You got 39 wins. So
yep.
What is it? 39 and 25?
No, so, 39 and 27. And
23.
Relief. Yeah, and the relief staff though has more wins than the starters. Relievers.
Oh my goodness.
Relievers have 21 wins. The starters have 18.
In today's baseball, of course the reliever's going to have more wins than the starters. The starters don't pitch long enough to qualify.
They don't pitch long enough. Right? There you go.
Well, the Dodgers have pitched the fewest innings. Dodgers starters have pitched the fewest innings of any team in baseball.
Now, I know.
I thought it would be the Red Sox.
I know Gonsolin was on the mound on the 30th, the game when Aaron Judge hit a home run in the first inning, and then Ohtani hit one in the bottom half of inning number one, the first time that two MVPs hit a home run in the first inning.
That was the Friday game, and what came out a few days ago was that Gonsolin didn't tell Dave Roberts or Mark Pryor, and he was pitching that game with discomfort in his elbow.
Uh-oh.
But that came out. Ouch. This came out 2 or 3 days ago.
So was that the last game he pitched?
Yes.
And now are they looking at Tommy John or?
Not to the MRI. They did an MRI on Saturday, and it is negative. The ulnar collateral ligament is not damaged. It sounds more like what's going on with Blake Snell, although Snell may be coming back in the next 2 or 3 weeks, but it's just irritation. It's just inflammation.
Has anyone heard from Rob Manfred about this major problem in baseball? Has he ever made a statement that anybody knows of?
I don't think so.
No.
Well, the consensus is, though. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think they're beginning to talk about it in the commissioner's office. Something I heard that they're talking about the injuries and all of that stuff. So I don't know if they'll make a statement. I don't know if they'll talk to, you know, we'll probably have to wait till the winter meetings and to see what the teams say in those winter meetings. Cause don't they do a lot of, policy changing and talking through things in those meetings?
I don't know about the winter meetings, whether they do that or whether they do that at the owners meetings or general managers meetings. They have several different, sets of meetings in the off season. The winter meetings used to be mostly about trades. And at the minor league level, the winter meetings was one great big job fair. And that's where my partner and I got our first job at the LA winter meetings in 1990.
But Michael, I have a hard question to throw out. Given what we've heard from a couple of our guests over the last few months, what is it that baseball really can do if these young people are getting signed up and they already have wear and tear on their arms that players 30 years ago, 40, 50 years ago never had to experience? What really can baseball do about it?
It starts just like they're doing, like our guests have said. They're starting early,
right?
But they can go to the minor leagues, the kids leagues, and they can teach them, you know, what's protection and what is good for building those kids of muscles and keeping them from getting injured, or at least slowing the process.
Go
ahead, Mitch.
I can't see Major League Baseball going. I mean, what they can do, whatever they need to do in the minor leagues, and I know what I'd do if I were a minor league, pitching instructor or whatever. But I just cannot imagine Major League Baseball going to the various youth leagues, Babe Ruth, American Legion, whatever, and saying, folks, you've got to not pitch these kids as much, and you've got to not let them throw curveballs and sliders until they're a certain age. I just don't think Major League Baseball will do that. I just don't think they used to. Hey, a lot of things folks used to do that they don't do anymore. I just don't see it.
No, science.
You're
has
not
taken
wrong,
over.
But I don't see it.
Science has taken over all the way down to the little leagues. You know, big guy's going to throw hard. People now have to throw sweepers. Who ever heard of a sweeper 5 years ago? Everybody wants to throw sweepers now. Yeah. Oh my goodness, this is insane. What's going on in baseball? It really is.
But guys, if they don't, if Major League Baseball doesn't do it, what do you think the quality of the game will be?
I almost hate to find out.
Well, but see what this in a backhanded way plays into their hands, because what they want are 10-9 games, not 1-0 games. So if a pitcher isn't as good, because, you know, he's got a bad arm, or he's only come off the IL a week before or whatever, they want offense. People apparently this day and age, they want bread and circuses. They want entertainment. 1-0 games are boring. So I don't see him doing a whole lot about it. I just don't.
Wow. Well, but if now correct me if I'm wrong, a slower pitched ball, which they used to before they started forcing these guys to throw harder, could produce more runs in their way of thinking. The pitchers started throwing harder to try to get the batters out. I believe that's the rationale. Am I right?
Yeah. Well, but here's the problem though, Michael. When you listen to the really good announcers, they'll tell you whether a hitter is a good fastball hitter or a good a curve or sweeper or slider hitter. And my sense is that most of today's hitters are not as well equipped to hit the slower pitches, the pitches that move a lot.
Well, to me, a smart pitcher would throw the breaking ball, you know, not as fast.
And then, of course, you've got this whole launch angle thing going on as well. That doesn't help the situation. I mean, I don't know why launch angle is so important.
Because again, Bob, home runs are entertaining. Yeah. Home runs.
But look, you take guys like Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge doesn't need an education on how to hit a home run scientifically. He does it very well, thank you. And in the past, so did Barry Bonds, Hank Aaron, Mark McGwire, Manny Ramirez, Sammy Sosa. They don't need to be re-educated in the process. They know how to do it.
No, but the point is to get your other guys. One of the guys that Michael, you follow him. The kid is smaller. He's not a kid anymore. The guy is smaller than I am. Jose Altuve was a home run hitter. And what is he? 5'7", 5'8", and 160, 70 pounds.
Yeah, probably not that.
You know, yeah, obviously he learned launch angle at a young age.
Not about the power though. The guy is really strong.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing though is that this whole launch angle concept is hurting offenses. I know on the Red Sox, it's been said that a lot of these players who've been in offensive slumps, thank God some of them are coming out of it now, but for the past month, those players who are just hitting the line drives and hitting the way they're meant to be hitting were doing better offensively than those who were trying to go by launch angle. They were striking out too much. The Red Sox, I think, lead the league in strikeouts. And they're being run by a nerdy front office who cares a lot more about launch angle than about what the players have always done. And this is what I'm saying.
Well, one of the things about launch... Well, go ahead, Michael.
No. I was just going to say, I agree. I think that I'd rather have a line drive hitter who's gonna place the ball, keep making contact. Yeah. That's the most important thing to me, is make contact. Home run will come. If you're a power hitter, home runs will come. Make contact.
And not everybody in baseball is meant to be a power hitter. I think that's the other part of the problem. A lot of front offices think it's necessary now, and it's not.
I suspect that launch angle is what derailed Chris Taylor's career. You know, the Dodgers cut him. He had been tinkering with his swing for the last two, probably 3 years now, since his glory days with us back in, 21 maybe, or 22.
He's with the Angels now.
And he's now with the Angels. And I checked yesterday, when he left the Dodgers, he was hitting 200. He's hitting 210 for the Angels, and apparently did hit a home run the other day. But I think that Chris Taylor, who was the quintessential line drive hitter when he started playing regularly for the Dodgers, and I suspect, and I don't know, I have not asked anybody, but I suspect that he bought into that launch angle, and it's messed him up. He won't be with the Angels at the end of after this season is over. I think his career's done.
Speaking of the Angels, they played the Red Sox last week, and one name that was noticeably absent from their lineup is Rendon. What's going on with him?
He's hurt again.
Thought so.
I think they put him on the IL maybe 3-4 days before he went to play the Red Sox. Even without him, though, Bob, the Angels, the lowly Angels, beat your Sox 2 out of 3, didn't they?
Well, everybody's been beating my Sox lately. I'm glad that they beat the Yankees 2 out of 3. But
yeah, one thing happened that's pretty special in that Angels series. In the Monday night game, the first game of that series, the Angels hit 3 home runs in the first inning. And that is something that no visiting team had done at Fenway since it opened in 1912. You think on that. My Yankees of Ruth and Gehrig never hit 3 home runs in the first inning at Fenway. You know, the mental Yankees didn't. Nobody, not even the steroid-aided teams, hit 3 home runs in one inning, first inning, mind you, at Fenway, until the Angels pulled that, and they barely won that game. They held on to win 7-5.
Well, I got to tell you, and I'm no Angel fan, never have been, but I'm saying this after they beat the Dodgers 3 straight a couple of weeks ago. The Angels have 2 or 3 really good young players. I think they're on the upswing. They got Neto at short.
Adele.
And they got this guy Shawnwell at first.
Yep.
Adele is off and on, but they've got another outfielder whose name escapes me. But they've got
Taylor
some
Ward.
Good young ball players.
Taylor Ward.
Him, but they got another guy. But the Angels have a pretty good young group of players. They're going to make some noise in the next couple of years, I think.
And did you hear, Bob, just before we come on the air, the Red Sox said they're going to call up Roman Anthony after he hit
that's who I was going to ask him.
Yes, he's up.
Almost a 500-foot grand slam at, I don't know if it was at Worcester, but it was in a Worcester game.
Yes, it was a 497-foot home run. It was a grand slam.
Wow.
And the announcer went ballistic. He said, the Roman umpire strikes again.
Yes, he did. I heard that. And if I can get the radio version, that'll be on my next podcast. I don't think that's what you might have heard when he said the Roman Empire. I think that was the TV guy, unfortunately.
Oh, I thought it was the radio guy.
I'll find out. And if I get lucky, you'll hear it on my podcast whenever that comes out.
Hey, Bob, you want to see if we have any callers?
Yes. One more question for you, Mitch, before we take callers. And it's about Walker Buehler. I want to ask you about Walker Buehler because he has hit the skids with the Red Sox. Do you foresee this happening with him? You're used to him. You know him pretty well.
Well, I think there was a reason the Dodgers didn't think they should re-sign him, even when Buehler, you know, he said he wanted to go somewhere else. I think it was mutual. The last I heard, he was 4-1. I don't know what his record is now, but...
Well, he pitched Buehler, 2 innings his last outing.
Buehler, maybe some of these guys come off a Tommy John surgery and are never the same. And mm-hmm. maybe Buehler is just one of those guys.
Okay.
You know, and I'm sorry, because he was a good pitcher for us for a couple, 3 years. And we got the save last year in the last game of the series. But it's unfortunate.
It is. All right. So let's turn to our audience and let me ask Kirby if we have any hands raised.
We did not.
Okay, well, let us know if that changes. We're here for the duration.
My hand's up. I put alt Y.
I'm sorry, Robert, I'm getting mixed up with so many Roberts and Bobs that my head's spinning.
I'll be good looking one.
Yeah, okay, all right. We got that cleared up. Okay.
Okay, a couple of things. I've been an Angel fan since 1947 in the Coast League. 8 years old, my first games, and they lose and lose. But I'm also a Cub fan, so I stick with them, and I'm proud of the Cubs. Secondly, I read a great article about Ron Washington, old school, and too bad he's getting older, but if they hang with him, I think he'll rebuild the Angels a little bit. But the one question I want to ask you guys is one you haven't touched on yet. You know who is putting a ban on travel? And he's saying, I don't want anybody from these countries that are going to practice insurrection against America. I'll let the teams come, but not the fans, not the rich guys from these different countries to the Olympic Games. What do you guys think of that? Is it too early to worry about it? Do you think he'll double down? Thank you.
Yeah, Bob,
good question,
so much.
Bob. Go ahead, Mitch. I haven't thought about it, but let's see what you have to say.
Well, I was going to say, given how things are going, things are going to be so different in 2028 that... Mm-hmm. I don't even want to speculate. My thought when there was a travel ban imposed on Venezuela and Cuba, I was thinking, gee, I hope all of the Venezuelans, because I think half the Latin pitchers in Major League Baseball are from Venezuela. But my first thought was, I hope these guys all have their paperwork and visas in order. But who knows what's going to where things are going to be in 28. And I've got to say, and I don't know if you heard my comments before the season started about Ron Washington. I have the world's greatest respect for him. He played a couple of years in the Dodger minor league system, never made it to the majors, but he kicked a serious cocaine habit. Mm. And the man has been upfront about it and his struggles. And I think Ron Washington is the best thing that's happened to the Angels in years and years and years.
I thought he played for Minnesota.
He made it to the majors with Minnesota, not with the Dodgers.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. I'll mute now. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Anybody else, Herbie?
All right, I'm double checking this time, but nope.
You know, he was a rookie. No, he was a coach, I mean. He was a coach when I was a rookie broadcaster in 1991. He was in the Royals organization at that time, and it's goodness, that's 35 years almost. So he's been quite something, and they've kept him.
I think he's the oldest manager. I want to say he's 74 or 75, something like that. I think he's the oldest manager in baseball right now.
Yeah. I wish he had been the coach when the Rangers won the series.
How old's Bochy?
Bochy's probably up there, too.
Bochy's getting up there, too.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Luther, we're just here talking about everything, anything and everything.
Hell, good. Did you guys see the email about Nigel Kennedy getting another seven-figure deal over the weekend? Another one, I think. In NIL and the.
I know she had the $1 million one.
Yeah. I think she got like another $750,000 one or close to another million and another, it's another huge contract for her. Another big one.
Now that I missed.
I just asked the A critter.
He dropped over the weekend.
Bochy is, I just asked the eight critter. Bruce Bochy is 70.
Okay.
Oh, man. Well, I think Bruce Bochy's like a baseball lifer along with like a few other guys, like who was it? Jim Leland, who's retired not too long ago.
We were saying that Ron Washington was the oldest manager in baseball, and I remember Bochy's must be up there too.
Well, yeah, Bochy's up there. I think I'm trying to think if there were any other ones that's currently up there. I think Cardinals Oliver Marmol's still the youngest right now, I think. Out of all of them.
You know, I'm so old, I remember when Bruce Bochy was the third string catcher for the Mets.
I think one of our guests that was up here basically was like, when he was talking about like, which players on a baseball field would be good managers, and he said catchers, and I'm like, I'm not surprised. I mean, Mike Matheny used to be the manager for both the Cardinals and the Royals. So I'm kind of not surprised. And Bruce Bochy,
he caught here for the Astros for a while.
Well, yeah,
yes, he did. Behind Alan Ashby,
he went to California.
Was it Alan Ashby the starter, Mike? During that era, Alan Ashby,
I think they sort of platoon.
If I remember right, for the longest time, Alan Ashby was Milo Hamilton's number two on Astros baseball broadcast for a while.
Who was a good manager and a former catcher is Bob Brenly.
Yeah.
He was a catcher for the Giants.
He was on the MLB broadcast and the World Series manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yep. He was a starter for a year or two with the Giants.
Yeah, he was. I'm trying to think. Jim Riggleman, I'm trying to remember. Jim Riggleman was never a player, was he? He may have been. I don't remember.
Maybe in minors.
Maybe. Cause I know he managed a few teams. I think it was the Indians/Guardians. And I think the Cubs at one point, if I'm right.
Luther, before you arrived, we were touching on the NBA and the firing of Tom Thibodeau, which I think was totally uncalled for. What do you think?
Again, I don't know, but this also falls into the category of what the Dallas Stars did after they lost in the Western Conference final, firing their head coach too. After the coach and the goalie got into it. Pete DeBoer and Jake Ottinger got into it. What was it? I guess in like game 5 or 6 or something like that. And they fired him I think they fired like DeBoer like on that Friday or whenever they fired him. I'm like, wait a second. You mean you're firing a coach that got you almost got you back to the Stanley Cup final? All because your goalie because your goalie wasn't happy with him? So you basically chose your goalie over your head coach? Like, I don't understand that.
And there's a lot of stuff going on in Dallas between the Stars and the Mavs.
Tell me about it.
There's a lot of stuff going on, so we'll have to see how it all plays out, whether they break up their partnership.
You know what's so strange? It almost feels like this was kind of inevitable, if you really want to know the truth about it, with Nico Harrison maybe getting the Mavericks out of their, you know, rat hole that they're in kind of right now, and with the Stars, for the Stars, what's going to be critical is who's going to be their next head coach. Same thing with the Knicks. You can't go assistant head coach that has never coached in his life. You're going to have to, if you're the Knicks and the Stars, you're going to have to go get a guy that has coached.
By the way, the Bruins went out and got somebody, Marco Sturm.
Former San Jose Sharks defenseman.
And Bruins player for a lot of years. He won a Stanley Cup.
Marco Sturm's last job was the coach of the Kings top farm team, the Ontario Reign.
In the AHL, the Ontario Reign. Yep. Along with the Hershey Bears. And then I'm trying to think if the Barracuda are still in there or not, because I remember the Admirals had to play them a couple of years ago in the playoffs, though, in the Abbotsford Heat. Cause there were some interesting teams in the AHL. I don't know how many of those are still in operation. Along with the Cleveland Monsters, of course. Which is the
Any Columbus thoughts Blue on?
What do you guys, what do you guys think of Kesty's broadcasting of the playoffs?
You mean with PJ Kalismar and George Serrano? with Kesky?
Marquette. Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Kesky's
talking
fantastic.
About the NBA, Mike?
I mean, Kesky.
Yeah.
I mean, look.
Yeah.
I hope we bring him back on after the finals. I hope we do.
Great.
Because
he is great. Yeah.
He's a good guy.
Look, if a local team hired him away from ESPN, ESPN would not be the same on the radio side. I can promise you that.
I haven't listened to the finals. Is he still doing it with Carlissimo?
Yes. PJ, PJ Carlissimo and George Sedano's on the sidelines.
I want to know whether Carlissimo sounded like he had a terminal case of laryngitis before he got choked out by that player.
Yes, he did. Hold on, Mitch, let me tell you, to answer your question in one word, yes. Even when he was at Seton Hall, yes.
He reminded me of the late Dennis Green. Remember when Dennis Green went into the broadcast booth?
Sims on Sunday night. Look, with Dave Sims on Sunday
Green
night.
Green always sounded that way, but I was
especially
Carlissimo. He almost got he got choked out. Did he sound that way before that happened?
I think that's the way PJ Carlissimo's always sounded. I'm like, wow. Well, he is Italian after all. Keep in mind. So, he's always sounded like that.
Yeah, I just wanted to know whether.
No, it's true. Big John Thompson, I was always a huge fan of Big John when he was doing the NCAA tournament with, Rattray, and then it was Rattray and Harlan, then it was Rattray and Kugler with Big John before Big John sadly.
Is John Thompson?
John Thompson.
I was not a fan of his broadcasting.
He really didn't do, you know, he just gave the coaching side of it because Rattray was doing more of the color.
Yeah, but he turned. No.
Well,
he slowed the game down.
Well, more often than not, it was going to be Kugler and Rattray or Harlan and Rattray anyway.
A couple of things I'd like to do. Sorry about that, gentlemen. Before we wrap up, okay, Thunder Pacers. I'm going with Pacers in seven. Anybody have any thoughts?
Oklahoma
City.
If the Pacers are going to win in seven, Halliburton's going to have to at least hit at least two game winners to at least force a game seven. I don't think he can do that like he did in game one, because I don't think the Thunder is going to let them do that. I think it's going to take six, but I think the Thunder win.
Given that Oklahoma City has best defense in the league, they're
not sure if you heard. This is your 10-minute warning.
Thank you, Herbie.
Yeah, it happened once. They're not going to let it happen again to allow it. Mm-hmm.
And they were up by what, 15 at one point in game one, and then all of a sudden it just slowly just whittled away. And every time the Thunder thought they had it, went away.
Yeah,
17.
The other series. Go ahead, Mike.
No, go ahead, Bob.
The other series I wanted to look at was the Oilers-Panthers in hockey.
I think that one could go seven.
Edmonton in seven.
I think that one could go seven. And I think Edmonton finally gets over the hump, but it's not going to be an easy one because Florida's got some boys on that team. Florida's got...
The Bruins fans are probably kicking themselves about that one.
Well, blame the front office for that.
Oh, I do. They blew up the
team.
They blew up the Bruins.
Oh, I know they did. Trying to get their youngins up there quicker. And look at where it's gotten.
Now, what you guys have to do is you have to find out, you have to make a wager how many of these last five games are going to go into overtime, because the first two did.
The first one went single overtime. The second one went double. Something tells me if we get game three and it's in triple overtime by 11 o'clock, we gotta go. 11 o'clock central time. Like, look.
To be continued. That's the way.
Let me tell you.
And the other thing I wanted to ask everybody is, what do you think of Aaron Rodgers going to the Steelers?
A waste.
Let me put it this way. The quicker that when you're for the Steelers fans that don't want him there, the quicker that season ends, the better.
I don't think
he's got it anymore, guys. I mean,
I don't know who made that decision. And did Tomlin, was he okay with that?
Well, okay.
He was their third choice. Did you hear that? He was the Pittsburgh's third choice. They wanted Stafford and they wanted, I forget who the other guy was, but you know, they had no choice but take Rodgers.
Here's the thing. They could have signed Justin Fields for 20. They weren't going to keep Russell Wilson. So it was either keep Justin Fields and figure out what he can and can't do, or sign a decrepit looking like Methuselah Russell Wilson, who can't really throw anymore. His arm is almost shot his wad, literally. He's got nothing left except for stop fades. Which more defenses can
The other interesting possible signing, and I haven't heard today, is the Texans are looking at Nick Chubb.
I think they signed him over the weekend.
They were talking about signing him over the weekend.
Yeah, I thought he had
to pass a physical.
I thought I heard something on PFT Live today that they have Mixon, Chubb, and Pierce as their three-headed backfield right now, from what I've heard.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not, because they drafted a guy pretty high whose last name escapes me. But I think I know
what you're talking about, yeah.
The one thing that those of us who play fantasy football know is Joe Mixon is not going to score 10 touchdowns this year. Nick Chubb is going to be the goal line guy.
Well, Chubb's going to be their Jerome Bettis. If the Texans are smart and they use both of them the correct way and they don't get CJ Stroud hurt and killed like they did at the back end of the season where they couldn't block to save their lives, they've got a chance.
Stroud has some arm problems right now.
Speaking of quarterbacks and arms, did you guys hear that Anthony Richardson is going to miss all of mandatory minicamp and the start of training camp, which is sounding more and more like Daniel Jones, who's supposed to be the backup, could be the Colts opening day starter? Is this the beginning of the end for Anthony Richardson, who hasn't really had many reps to begin with?
Oh, well.
If Daniel Jones is a starter, Indy will finish fourth in that division.
And Shane Steichen will be fired at midseason.
Yeah, no, Tennessee will finish ahead of him.
Shane Steichen will get fired at midseason.
Pittsburgh, by the way, talk about a race to the bottom. It'll either be Pittsburgh or Cleveland
in the number three spot. By the way, the betting odds, by the way, I heard this morning from Caesar Sportsbooker or BetMGM when the Steelers, before they got Aaron Rodgers to win the Super Bowl, was plus 4,500. Now with Aaron Rodgers signed, it only dropped $500 to a plus 4,000.
Yeah, now he's.
And I'm like, that ain't going to help you much. The thing is, y'all got a long way to go and a short time to get there.
Well, and then of course you've got this whole Stephon Diggs saga
with New England. By the way, what's up with that?
Out of proportion. I don't know. It's all about social media. What else?
Okay, but before we get out of here, I want to come back to your question on Thibodeau. I mean, here's the thing: if Rose and Dolan think they can find better and find a way to get the next step and finally get a championship for the Knicks that they have not had since like 1970 when Willis Reed was there, and they can find a coach that can actually get those players to go further than the Eastern Conference final, fine. But here's the thing you're going to run into. If you get bounced in the first round of the playoffs, are you going to fire that coach after 1 year? Are you going to give that coach time? That's the biggest question that I have for the Knicks front office. Are you going to be willing to give that coach some time to implement his or her system if they decide to go female coach route and allow them to put what they need to put in place to make it work.
It's going to be interesting because there is going to be a lot of movement.
Oh yeah.
Even this year in the NBA. So
watch out. And by the way, that third apron of the salary cap of the luxury tax, if you go over a certain number or whatever, you're going to have to pay all that back. So it's going to get really interesting to see how many folks, you know, get kept from the current rosters and how many folks due to salary cap casualties are going to be gone.
But the bigger issue about coaching, and it's the case particularly in basketball and football and hockey, maybe not so much in baseball, but coaches are on much shorter leashes. And again, it's the times we're living in.
Well,
we could have quite a discussion on that, but I suspect the average length of a coaching
3 years, if you're lucky.
But I bet it's gone down over the last decade.
But here's the thing, though.
In all sports.
When a coach walks through the door, right, they already have a Damocles blade over their head because they know if they don't, you know, succeed immediately, they're going to be gone before they can even get what they need in place to be in place. They're going to be out.
By the way, shame on me. The guy that's going to give Pierce a run for third string is a guy who played for USC for a year, Woodrow Marks.
Let me tell you, Marks was pretty doggone good when, you know, he was in the backfield. Because I think it was, who was it? It was him and the other back that USC.
We have about 20 seconds, guys.
That they had as a two-headed backfield. And I think the backup is going to be the main starter.
Well,
anyway,
guys,
that's all I got.
Thank you so much. It's been a great program. Glad to have all of you here. Peter, we miss you. We hope we have you back next week. Thank you, Herbie. Thank you, Brad. Thanks, everyone. Go safe with God's abundant blessings. See you next week.